Welcome to All Things in the Name of Love. If you like this show, please like, subscribe, and share. Thanks.
Welcome to another episode of All Things in the Name of Love. And today I have with me Ben Ufana, who I'm going to read, who I love because you on your bio, you said you help people heal their bodies, minds, and broken hearts and deep emotional wounds while enabling them to realize their true potential and fulfill their purpose, and the fact that you lived in the communities of Kiowa and Apache. I know I butchered that, and Apaches. And I love that because I know my soul is very connected to tribes in the Northwest. And so I want to talk a little bit about your journey. Like, what started you to remember that you're a spiritual being and how that's unfolded?
Started in early childhood, where I was drawn to Native Americans and peoples of other indigenous cultures, and the fascination grew into adolescence, just reading everything I could. Especially, there's a university library not too far away.
Nice.
And there were all these books that were written maybe anywhere 1860s, 80s, up into maybe 1920s or 30s, that, and where they gave the personal accounts of a lot of these Native people and what they'd experienced. And especially as I heard about the traditional Native doctors going on the vision quest, these kinds of visionary experiences that they had. And I was just transfixed by it all and thinking, wow, if I ever have the opportunity, this is what I will do with my life. And so I started saving money and bought a car. And by the time I was 17, I took off on my own, still in high school, landed in a community in southwestern Oklahoma. It's predominantly Kiowa Indians, and there were other surrounding tribes.
Okay.
Comanche, Kiowa Apache, Cheyennes and Arapahoes, and Caddo, Wichita, Delaware. And so in the peyote meetings, one of my friends introduced me to his elderly father, who, not biological, but had taken him in, and said, "Hey, Dad, Ben wants to go into the peyote meetings." And for some reason, he made an exception for me.
Oh, wow.
And even when some of the other Native elders were challenged him on it, he just said, "Well, this one's different. Let him come in." And so they did.
Wow.
They deferred to his authority. And it was during the peyote meetings that I met my mentor, Horace Delkai, who is one of the last surviving traditional doctors among the Kiowa tribe.
Oh, wow.
Horace, initially I was afraid he would dismiss me and say, "Oh, this only works for Native people. Good luck there." And I was physically shaking when I approached him. That, now, after a few encounters, a few times that I'd interacted with him, and I just said, I want to learn to do what you're doing. And he says, "What are you doing this weekend? Can you start fasting?" And still trembling, I just said, "Yeah, sure." And drove down into the Wichita Mountains, not eating or drinking the next 2 days and nights. And it was just his way of determining if I was truly serious. And he instructed me to come out to see him on the Navajo Reservation. And the apprenticeship was very intense. He would transmit portions of his own healing gifts. A lot of these traditional Native doctors, especially in times past, possessed paranormal abilities. So he would take objects like the end of a feather and physically project it into my body. I'd be going into a state akin to a seizure momentarily.
Wow.
And I could feel this extraordinarily powerful presence within my body. But when you take that transmission, it's not enough to just take it and run with the ball. You have to earn the right to work with it. And typically, the vision quest, it involves going 4 days and nights, no food, no water, alone in the mountains or some other remote wilderness area. And so Horace started me out there, but later on, I continued on my own. I've gone dozens of times, just spring and fall, just keep going back, because every time I go, initially there was a lot of trauma that I carried from my childhood and adolescence, and there are times where it was like a near-death experience. I'd feel these extraordinarily powerful beings descend into my body, and
oh wow,
I'd be reliving those experiences. Some I had a vague recollection of, others had completely forgotten, and yet it all came flooding back with this intensity, all the memories, the emotions, all the physical sensations. And I could feel this presence taking those lived experiences and all those highly charged emotions and transforming it so that I could digest and assimilate all of this. And and as that would happen, it would also be simultaneously building this new foundation. As that happened, you know, my relationships, and earlier on in the beginning, when I first started working with people, and that those, that medicine, that power began to wake up inside of me.
Oh, wow.
I found myself forming attachments to women who were about as emotionally wounded as I was, you know, carrying trauma from my past. And, and some were just disinterested and unavailable, or a few were quite abusive, but it was a reflection of my own emotional wounding. But as I continued with the vision quest and those, that deep emotional wounding, that trauma healed, then the quality of my relationships changed dramatically. And I found myself attracting and attracted to individuals with whom I could form more meaningful and more deeply fulfilling relationships. So it's been this decades long process of evolution.
Yeah. I love that, because I've seen that with myself. When I clear trauma from my body, things shift in relationships dramatically. And I use the terms frequency and resonance because that's how my brain works to understand it. I see the shifts in the frequency with who I connect with. And it's not a judgment about anyone else. It's just that the shifts in frequencies have happened. So some people drop and some people come in. And it's just a fascinating reflection to see how our worlds shift when we do the inner work.
Definitely. And in many ways, it's been gradual, but there are times like I'd come off the mountain and right away somebody would just drop out of my life. And it sometimes hurt when that occurred. But over time, looking back in hindsight, it's like, yeah, I needed to let go of that individual. And we don't always comprehend the healing or transformation taking place as it's occurring. And some people do become fearful of the changes taking place. And and unfortunately for them, they'll just bolt, they'll run. You know, we may give them a call, they don't respond. And and yet there's the healing that's taking place, and they're experiencing some degree of it, but they... and they're not with the right mindset that would enable them to continue.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I get that, because it's the degree of personal awareness and responsibility that each person carries within us as we remember more and more of our oneness, and who we truly are. What I've seen is some people are ready to hear and some people are not. And it's always an interesting place from compat. It's like a, as an interesting phrase is coming through. compassionate observation. That when I see somebody respond in a way that isn't where I came from, like my intent is like, I'm just bringing awareness and I'm trying to love you and be compassionate. And then there's this, that just tells me where they are on their journey. And that means I just don't want to interact with them as much because I know what the response is going to be. And it's not a judgment against them. It's just like keeping my own energy clear.
Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead.
As I was saying earlier, it can really hurt at the time because when you have this attachment and you're wanting to, you know, on multiple levels, if it's on a personal level and you find this emotional attachment and the person drops out of your life or disappears, then yeah, that does hurt. But sometimes it's a gift too, because let's say someone ghosts you, for instance, and they're showing you that they're not someone that can really be counted on, that they're not reliable, that they, you know, because in relationship, you're going to encounter all kinds of adversity and you want somebody who can face the issues head on and even working with people. And a lot of it is just because people don't know or they don't understand. They're not knowing any better. And so therefore, because they are so lacking in understanding of their own bodies and minds in the healing process taking place, feelings, emotions come up, issues that they don't want to face.
Right.
And so because of that, there are people who will just bolt. Mm-hmm. They'll take off, they'll disappear. And the sad thing is that when those who do is that we just barely touched into that emotional wounding, those issues that need to be addressed or resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And because they disappear and fail to follow through, in many instances, they continue to carry that wounding.
Mm-hmm.
And it means that in many instances, they never heal those wounds. Those issues are never resolved. And it thwarts them in many respects. They continue to reenact the same patterns, and they don't get to graduate.
Right.
They remain trapped in that holding pattern. So I do the best I can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the reasons I say reach those you can, entertain the rest.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely understand that because I have a friend who I hadn't seen in a long time, and I went up to Orcas Island last year for a few months, and en route, I stayed with her for a few days, and I could feel massive levels of anxiety. And I said, you know, I could help you with that. And she said, no, I'm good. I'm like, okay. You know, when you're like, yeah, you're really not, because I can see the anxiety. I feel it. It's like visceral level of anxiety, but it's your comfort zone. Because if you address the anxiety, and I used to be very anxious, I've spent many, many years in somatic healing. So I'm present with my body when I feel the anxiety so I can release it.
Mm-hmm.
If you think it's that big and you're that scared of it, it is that big and it's that scary. And until you're ready to realize that it's just an illusion in your head that you created for you to heal from, it's hard to, like, you as gifted as you are as a healer, because I can feel that, if somebody's not ready for it, they're just not going to be able to receive it.
Yeah. I find that there are a lot of people who are on the edge. It could go either way. And there could be all kinds of influences or interferences. And so one of the things I find is initially, if you want to get them in to come in sooner, rather than later. If I could get them to come in successive days,
mm-hmm.
because often they start thinking about the process taking place, and because of their lack of understanding, they may not make the best decisions or mm-hmm. evaluations. And so you get them in quickly in successive days. And what happens is, yes, this emotion's coming up, their body's going through a cleansing process.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that in successive days, you can go in really intense, really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, those first few sessions, many people's bodies hold so much of this
mm-hmm.
stagnation, this backlog of all this years, decades of stress, unprocessed mm-hmm. emotion, these lived experiences that they haven't digested. Mm-hmm. They're living within people's bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first few sessions is getting the body to where it's malleable, responsive, dissolving mm-hmm. this armor, processing this backlog of stagnation. But as that begins to dissolve, clear, be digested, then the body becomes way more malleable, way more responsive.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a fluidity. It's as I continue to work with people, there will be this, again, the body takes on this fluid quality. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of physical movement taking place within the body. Some mm-hmm. people feel sensations, something that feels like reconstruction taking mm-hmm. place, where there's injuries or damage within internal organs. Mm-hmm. And maybe if they're suffering from digestive disorders such as colitis, IBS, mm-hmm. or Crohn's disease,
mm-hmm.
and they feel that reparative process. Some people have even described sensations of hands within the body doing
oh, wow.
some form of surgical reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as I said, initially, a lot of people's bodies are, there's this numbing, this deadening, this disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of the, what I would refer to as circuitry, that because we numb out, in many ways, we shut down, we deny, we suppress our emotions, we mm-hmm. don't want to look at issues, we
right.
don't want to go there.
Right.
And all this stuff is building up within our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
It has a very deadening effect. But a lot of these yep. connections between the different parts of our, you know, the internal organs and the brain and, you know, these connections that facilitate awareness,
mm-hmm.
self-awareness and understanding, there's mm-hmm. a lot of that which is not really functioning.
Right.
And so there's a song by the punk band, the Sex Pistols, years ago called Pretty Vacant,
mm-hmm.
which I was hearing that when I was growing up. And but it fits
mm-hmm.
in the lyrics to the song. We're so pretty, oh, so pretty, pretty vacant. And it's yeah. just, we're checked out. We're just
yeah.
not with, we don't, we lack self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
We lack this depth of understanding and, again, awareness of ourselves.
Yeah.
And so there's this muddle. And so starting out with people is doing the sessions is that people become more lucid, more mm-hmm. cognizant. A lot of times it's people can't even grasp or comprehend the underlying source of the issues because there's so much muddling
mm-hmm.
and they lack the resources needed
right.
to do the deep level processing of their emotions. So in working with people, it's taking whatever traumatic experiences and all these highly charged emotions, those events they've lived mm-hmm. through, it's taking all this, they go into a dreamlike state, they are literally, it's being transformed. They're digesting it like the food they eat.
Mm-hmm.
It's transformed so that it becomes fuel for growth. And I watch as the lights come on in people. I watch as people become more lucid, more cognizant
mm-hmm.
of their bodies and their lived experiences, their history, their family of origin, and all the dysfunction and how it all links up with patterns playing out in their present day life. I don't know that I would call it an illusion, because these emotions, these traumas, these lived experiences, these stresses we internalize,
mm-hmm.
they do have substance to them, and they do leave profound imprints. They're carried with the body. And so we do need to thoroughly digest all these things, like the food we eat. And where so many people get into enormous trouble, where they become more and more numbed, deadened, disconnected, shut down, they lose touch with that inner core being residing deep within them, is because they have so much of the stagnation accumulated within their body, these layers of armoring. They disconnect from that core being, and a lot of those, that circuitry, for lack of a better word, it's just, it's not transmitting very well.
No, I get that, because I'm a former expert on numbing myself out. And the entire time my soul was like, wake up, woman, wake up. And when I finally started taking somatic healing with one of my dear sisters, and I started feeling, I was like, oh, wow, this, it was so fascinating, because all of a sudden I could feel things. And as an example, this morning at around 1:30, I woke up and I had trouble sleeping. So what I did was I did these practices with my toes and my feet that just calm me down. And it's something she taught me, just to be present with all the meridians in my feet. And so there's something about like just holding space for that, that just made the whole body happier again, because I was just being present. Was like, I'm not going to try to ignore it. It's not going away. So what is it trying to tell me? And how can I be present to feeling? And I've done it enough that my body expects it. It's like, if it has something to tell me, it knows I'm going to shut down any thoughts and just be present with my body. And that is such a gift that I give to myself.
Yeah, and there's different ways to be present. I've developed this whole intensive series of meditation practices.
Oh, cool.
Initially, because I was struggling with those forming attachments to women who reflected my emotional wounding, who themselves were quite deeply wounded.
Right.
And there was such this excruciating pain that was emerging that I was consumed by. And I would taught myself to dive into the depth of it. And, and sometimes it involved staying with it for hours. But as I kept breathing, at a certain point, I could feel it breaking open and coming out of my body in waves. And there were these extraordinarily powerful emanations of warmth that were beginning to glow from within, emanate from within. And that was an important part of dissolving those unhealthy attachments. But over time, as that intensity of pain abated, now I discovered, well, there's all kinds of stress and emotion trapped throughout the body. And so I developed this whole intensive series of practices. Like, for instance, if you bring your awareness into your chest cavity or into your abdomen, and you remain fully present, now, you're going to access some things if you do this. It could be very faint. It may feel like some heaviness or numbness, but I was doing this over months. And like when I started in the heart, there was this numbness, this deadening, little faint vapors of feeling, loneliness, longing. After a while, my whole chest cavity was aching, and there's this whole torrent of feeling. And then as I moved through that, there was this feelings of euphoria and this connectedness to a higher power. And then after 3 months, it's like, well, what would happen if I brought my awareness down into my abdomen? I didn't feel much of anything at first. And, but as I continued, I started feeling some digestive activity, rumbling, churning, burning, pulsing, tingling. Sometimes you get gassy. It comes out either end.
Right.
You start having to run to the toilet. It starts cleaning out your digestive tract. It actually, you keep doing this, it actually improves your physical digestive function. Focusing in the abdomen, the enteric nervous system lining the digestive tract, there's something like a million neurons producing dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine, and other neurotransmitters. And yet many people, this abdominal region, they're cut off from the diaphragm down. That region of the body becomes a toxic waste dump. And they're holding this backlog of just stagnant, toxic residue. It could, some people feel nauseous going there initially, but you keep going there and you start processing or digesting all that residual that's hanging out there. And it begins to awaken this whole deeper intuition, this whole instinctual bandwidth of consciousness that most people are largely disconnected from. Before, where I was too much in my head, very naive, ungrounded. And as I was doing this practice consistently, I found that it took my awareness where I was up here dissociated and dropped me deeper into my body. Of course, we also need the interventions too, because a lot of the traumas that we carry are so wounding, and there's ways that we carry these profound disconnects, and there are limits to our body and mind's innate healing intelligence. And carrying a lot of that trauma from my childhood and adolescence that was being reenacted in my relationships, and initially starting out psychotherapy, but then it wasn't actually healing the trauma itself, and so doing a lot of deep tissue body work was getting me more into my body. And a lot of those emotions that were trapped throughout the body were being dislodged, coming into my conscious awareness so I could then process them. And then the work that I've done with gifted healers, you know, one from Brazil and the Philippines, some others. And there are these traditions of healers here. There's an unfortunate thing about the whole New Agey thing was coming into existence when I got myself back into college back in the 80s. And it's like, wow, this is amazing. This is cool. But then I was seeing it only went so deep. And there's a difference between people with a spiritual attitude or mindset. And then you get into these ancient spiritual traditions and it's like hours of intensive, hardcore daily practice. Incredibly disciplined. And, you know, and here you have people, 3-weekend workshops, and they assume they're master healers, and it's absurd. Whereas in these ancient traditions, such as training with my mentor, you would go through years of training. The transmissions in these instances are usually passed down to one or just a few people at most. And you would go through, again, the vision quest, that 4 days and nights without the food and water in order to earn the right to work with these gifts of healing. You can't just disseminate these transmissions to whoever shows up at the door and can pay the workshop fee. No, they're very much protected. And it's like this in all these, whether the Tibetan Buddhist, among the Hindu Vedic tradition, in among Native Americans, other ancient spiritual traditions. And my intention's not to discredit or put anyone down. I actually want to see more people, whether you have to travel to Indonesia or Malaysia or somewhere in Central South America, and you apprentice with one of these extraordinarily gifted healers. It's going to involve years of intensive training. If you want to pursue, you know, the allopathic medicine, for instance, it's you go through your undergrad and then med school and internship and residency. And so in order to be a healer, it involves an equal commitment, dedication.
Yeah.
And it's extraordinarily hard work. It's not an easy process. And
right.
And you're also going to find a lot of people are very resistant because
right.
just the fact that we live in a culture that just doesn't fathom or understand these things. So there's it's rewards, but there's also some heartache that goes with it too, because of you see how people are wounded. And the fact that there's much of the population that's just not going to do what it takes to heal.
Right.
they'll run.
It's, you know, I did for many years because I didn't know. But, you know, pretty much at this point, I want to know what's keeping me from expressing my soul more. I don't want to pretend that I'm fixed. I mean, not that I'm broken, but like that I've uncovered all of the subconscious traumas and patterns that I have, because I know I haven't. So having that daily practice of being present with myself and really feeling into the feelings and sensations of what my body's trying to tell me, that's just non-negotiable for me, because what is more important to me than me? And it's not coming from a place of ego, it's coming from a place of honoring and loving myself enough to commit to myself. And that's, I remember about a year and a half ago, my former partner said to me, he's like, "You're doing stuff like the Dalai Lama or Jesus does." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm not like that." I mean, you know what I mean? Because like, he doesn't know anyone who would do what I'm doing, but I know a lot of people that do what I'm doing, because we're all on this mission to become who we're supposed to be. And that takes commitment. It takes courage. It takes commitment. It takes discipline. And on the other
side,
It's not to discourage anyone. It's just, it's a journey. It's not like, cause I went through the program of getting a PhD and like getting the certificate and all that stuff. And I'm like, okay, now I'm done. Only to find out that, no, that was the entry fee. And it was 14 years of college for me to realize that. And so it really is the journey. It's not the get to the end point. And that's when the practices come in and the daily presence comes in, and the importance of that, because at least for me, I really like being in the parasympathetic mode.
We have this massive defect in our thinking here in this Western culture. And two things, it's like, when am I done? This wanting to just do it. Okay, it's fixed now. And also just getting comfortable. I want to get to a place where I can just be comfortable. And we cannot sit still for very long. You're sliding backwards into stagnation, or you are growing, healing, evolving. And so we can, as I said briefly, we can have these little pauses or respites. And yet, again, you know, the fact that I trained with a traditional Native American doctor, a medicine man, and a master from China, has spent time with really intense people in India and Sri Lanka and from some other traditions. And and there's this, again, daily intensive practice, training with the Chinese master. There's these internal Qigong practices. A lot of these masters doing all this internal practice, if you try to strike them, they just redirect that force back into your body. It can do damage in the internal organs, or if they strike you, it could rupture internal organs like the kidneys, or they could send you flying across the room. And they don't go looking for a fight. It's just they just keep building that power.
Right.
But that power also facilitates the healing of their own physical bodies and also their evolution spiritual evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Hindu Vedic tradition among Native Americans, I've gone through dozens of vision quests, not trying to impress anyone, but like October was my 61st time. It's like,
wow.
And it's excruciating at times, yeah, getting through that, but it's, mm-hmm. but I can feel just the stresses of everyday life. As that accumulates in my body, being mm-hmm. human, and I don't want to just leave it there. So
right.
As I feel that accumulate, it's like, oh, I need to get my ass back to the mountain. And
mm-hmm.
and so I just keep taking steps. And in between, I generally do about 2 hours of sitting meditation practice a day. I'll do walking meditation. I mm-hmm. do practice all throughout the day. Even when I'm in the midst of some situation or circumstance, something triggers me, evokes strong emotion. I'll be, even in the midst of a conversation, I could just be breathing into mm-hmm. those feelings, those physical sensations. It's important how we breathe too. So many people are just breathing very shallow, high in their chest, because the emotional wounding, the trauma has a way of just restricting, creates a lot of tension, restriction in the body, mm-hmm. restricting our breathing capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So like when I breathe, I'm just inhaling very slowly, expanding my rib cage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm breathing about this quick, just one inhale all the way down to my abdomen. And then I'm exhaling also very slowly. And it may be difficult at first, but as you keep practicing, you're able to take in much more oxygen. Continue to inhale, expanding your rib cage, and again, breathing all the way down to your abdomen. And you exhale very slowly. And because as you breathe more deeply, it activates this innate healing intelligence within mm-hmm. your body and mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tell people, I encourage people to acknowledge you're facing different challenges in your life. Acknowledge mm-hmm. what's happening, what you feel in response to it, any feelings, any physical sensations.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they located in your body? Where do they mm-hmm. land in your body? Are they in your chest, your abdomen, solar plexus, some other locations?
Mm-hmm.
Usually they're going to be in your torso.
Right.
And center your awareness in the depths of what you feel. Keep breathing, mm-hmm. following the feelings and sensations. Mm-hmm. They will often go through a set of, you know, sequence of different feelings and sensations mm-hmm. will vary, but just keep following it. And I do this practice on a daily basis for hours. And again, make use of the most effective therapeutic interventions.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you need to explore and experiment, as I did, and mm-hmm. find out what's going to be most effective. I have found, of everything I've tried, doing the deep tissue body work, when I've worked with gifted healers, and the indigenous healers, extraordinarily powerful healers from these ancient indigenous traditions, we all act as conduits. It's not just energy. I mean, there's literally other forces or beings mm-hmm. working through our body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I said sometimes I'll be working with people and they'll feel sensations of like reconstruction mm. within the internal organs. And
mm-hmm.
you know, you have people that have experienced some combination of emotional, physical, even childhood sexual trauma or sexual assault or combat experience. And when I look into the subtle bodies, what they refer to as the chakras, the layers of the mm-hmm. aura, often there's a great deal of damage,
mm.
disfigurement, they fail to develop.
Mm-hmm.
People are to varying degrees dissociated. They're stunted in their development. There's a lot of these faculties and resources that are just missing.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I work with these individuals and this presence works through me, this presence goes in, it starts to build and construct mm-hmm. or develop these resources mm-hmm. that were not there before.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, again, it's simultaneously enabling them to digest, transform and digest those lived experiences. Mm-hmm. All that becomes fuel for growth. And so instead of being overwhelmed by your emotions and those experiences, mm-hmm. instead of running away, you have this presence and this added resources to just face it and deal mm-hmm. with it head mm-hmm. on and do what needs to be done, say what needs to be said. Mm-hmm. I just got into a really intense thing with Amazon customer service because they gave me some misinformation. I was just going at it with this intensity and mm-hmm. and they gave me the incorrect information, and then they come back and they said, no, we can't, we don't pay for the shipping, whatever. And it's like, but you told me. And I just hammered them and they right. said, okay, we'll credit that amount to your account. And it's like, I don't care. It's a multi-billion dollar company. It's like, give me what.
Right, right.
Give it to me. I don't right. care. Yeah, it's, yeah, they can, I spent the money, I bought a product, it broke. So do what needs to be done.
Right.
I don't care. Stop the excuses, just do right. it. And so the more presence and power we have in different situations and asserting our needs and our boundaries, of course, taking, you know, with the multi-billion dollar corporation, well, of course, they need to come through for me. But with individuals, we want to be careful. We want to not infringe on the well-being of others. We mm-hmm. need to not be a little narcissist or,
right.
you know, not be taking advantage, not right. be so self-absorbed that we mm-hmm. override the needs and considerations of other people. We need mm-hmm. to consider that. But as long as we're not doing it at someone else's expense. But there's also this, okay, I do ask for what I want. But at the same time, I consider the individuals with whom I interact. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. how can I come back? What is it that this individual needs? How can mm-hmm. I be there for them? Mm-hmm. And if I don't exactly repay it to the individual who granted me some favor, I'm thinking going down the line, like, wow, here's someone else in need. And mm-hmm. I remember this person some time back there. And I do feel it's important that we're also here to be of service.
I agree.
You know, to make a difference in the lives of others.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, one thing I've become so painfully aware of just the number of dogs that are in shelters. And you have these people getting their poodles and shih tzus and
I know.
And all these other foo-foo little breeds and Pomeranians. And mm-hmm. and yet, please, if you're considering getting a dog, you know, every time you go and you to these breeders and you're getting these breeds and they keep popping out litters, it contributes to this overpopulation of dogs. Mm-hmm. And whereas if you go down to your local shelter, there's like so many amazingly beautiful dogs, and literally many of these dogs are on doggy death row and they're living yeah. in horrendous conditions, they're being yeah. traumatized. So if you have that open space, and so many people are so lonely, and if you take in an animal or even a cat, but you know, I have an affinity to dogs. You take in a dog, you're saving, you can mm-hmm. literally be saving this dog's life. And there's ways in which we become so much more disconnected. We're spending all this time scrolling on our phones mm-hmm. and on social media, and we're just not present. And there's ways in which you have a dog, for instance, and the dog
you're
is
present
so
with
loyal.
The dog.
So you are present with the dog. So loving.
Yeah. But
a dog will teach you to be present.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, but yeah, my little divergence. So
that's okay. No, I get it. And anytime we interact with an animal, or for me, when I go on a hike, the tree, specifically any kin of cedars, really brings me into presence because I feel their energies.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that whole experience of like, how many ways, like, it's been sunny in Oregon for the past couple of days, and I'm so grateful because we've had rain for months. And so I'm outside laying on the ground and feeling the energy of Mama Gaia and connecting with that energy and looking up at the sky and just feeling the sun. And there's such a, it's a shift in my awareness, in my consciousness. I can feel how I'm connecting with the earth and the grass and the sky and the wind. And it's all like rewiring the circuitry in my body every time I do it. And I love, it's a non-negotiable. When it's sunny, I'm outside, unless it's like 90 degrees, but then I'll have to go in the morning. But like, it's just this need to have that connection with all that is, that I can't get if I'm sitting inside staring at my computer. But I mean, I have a heart-based connection, but I don't have the visceral ground connection that my soul and my body really need. And I notice when I am walking barefoot and I am connecting with Mama Gaia, I feel so much more alive in my body.
Mm-hmm.
She's awakening every cell in me.
I find there's a combination. Like on one hand, you know, we could be on the earth and it, there is this healing and there's awakening, but at the same time, we need to be able to go into, open up this emotional, these wounded aspects, because I find there's a way that, you know, even if you have a partner, for instance, who's extraordinarily loving, I see many instances where someone is carrying trauma from a past relationship, whether it be a romantic relationship or abuses they suffered, say, from their childhood. And if we're not able to access these wounded parts and feel them and be fully immersed and process or digest as I've described them, there's ways in which these parts of ourself stay encapsulated. And so you'd have the individual, for instance, if they're in a relationship and there are parts of themselves that are just not present, are capable of engaging, whether it be with their partner or able to love and be present to their children to the extent to which their children need them to be present for. And there's also, like I said, the intervention, say, for instance, when I've worked with some of these gifted healers, and as I go through the vision quest, where I feel that presence going in and actually transforming these deeply wounded parts of me, that where I've carried these traumas, but because, you know, for instance, I'll work with people who maybe their profession, it could be like a park ranger or something. Out in the park in nature a great deal of time, and or they spend a lot of time kayaking and biking and rock climbing and all that. And I see on one hand where there's this level of engagement, this presence, but I also see a lot of and feel a lot of that trauma that's trapped, all this residual that's left in the body.
Okay.
And so we need both.
Yeah.
I strongly encourage everyone, as much as possible, spend as much time as you can outdoors, on the earth, and in nature, as much time as you can. And at the same time, there are facets of healing. There are aspects of healing. Say, if you have the opportunity, you know, I know also, like, the Hindu priests have this process called yagyas or yagnas, if you're from a different part of India, and where they'll do this chanting, and even from a distance, and they're able to transmit this power. And that can help to awaken or start to facilitate that process of transformation of some of the traumas we hold in our body. But also, again, the sessions with gifted healers, such as myself and these other indigenous healers going on the vision quest. And there's a whole level of healing, you know, because anytime somebody tells me they're doing any practice or intervention, I'm always curious. It's like, really? Let me look in your, can I check out, look in your body, your mind? I want to see what's happening. And I could see the areas that are developed. I could see how different interventions are impacting that individual, how it's facilitating healing. I could feel the parts that are not moving, that are still frozen or bound. And there's no one magic bullet. It's right. We need a combination. We need a combination of practice.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I will say that vast majority of people, I mean, there are some people that maybe they have some psychotic disorder, or maybe their brain's just not functioning barely, hardly at all because of some severe traumatic brain injury, and they're mm-hmm. not really capable of doing some of these practices.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
are, but the vast majority of people will benefit, need to work with mm-hmm. this process, like I described, of digesting, mm-hmm. you know, acknowledge what's happening, what do you feel, drop into the depth of those feelings.
Yeah.
You're not sprinkling fairy dust. You're not sending light to them. You're not blowing them out of your body.
Right.
No, you just let it be what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Breathe into it. Allow it to take whatever time it takes. Some things you can work through in 5, 10, 15 minutes. If it's the death of a loved one, if it's some long-standing trauma, mm-hmm. you may have to keep returning to it for weeks, months, even years. Some mm-hmm. of the stuff is so deeply entrenched.
Yeah.
But just keep doing practice. Again, utilize these interventions. I'm open. I explore mm-hmm. lots of stuff. I discovered it's been around for many years now, but the sensory deprivation flotation tanks, I mean, that's mm-hmm. another useful, effective tool. Sometimes,
yeah.
you know, our biochemistry can be way out of whack, and
mm-hmm.
and we have this imbalances between the organs and systems, and
yeah.
and so depending on where you're at, it's going to determine what resources or what interventions are available to you. So if you're going through a breakup or divorce, for instance, if you could work with an acupuncturist, for instance, that will help to balance that,
mm-hmm.
the crazy biochemical
yeah.
imbalance that happens when we become obsessively in love and fixated on someone, and we're mm-hmm. obsessed because we can't let go of them, and we're in that devastating heartache. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, when I work with people one-on-one individually, if they're going through a breakup or divorce, most people are not going to go through a vision quest. It's just too powerful, too
yeah.
intense.
Yeah.
But what I find for the most part is I've worked with people where they were ghosted in the breakup or divorce, patterns of abandonment, unrequited love, and they digest that whole experience of their relationship,
mm-hmm.
all their partner, that person they were longing for. I know that sounds a little cannibalistic, but no, it's just metaphorically, you're digesting yeah. all that.
Right.
And all that highly charged emotion, I see people come through it, the mm-hmm. other side, and they're dissolving those unhealthy attachments.
Mm-hmm.
They're much lighter. They're mm-hmm. freer. And I've watched as a lot of these same people have attracted into their lives individuals with whom they could establish much more meaningful, much mm-hmm. deeper, much more fulfilling relationships. It's like as you heal, as you evolve, you naturally resonate with mm-hmm. healthier individuals, individuals who are growth oriented,
mm-hmm.
that you can experience this much deeper, much more fulfilling connection.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with that. And I am so grateful that I've had this conversation with you. And because I'm aware of time and that I have another
yes.
podcast coming, I do want to ask you, how can people find you?
Best way is go to my website, benoofana.com, BenOofana. So benoofana.com. There's a contact form. There's my phone number. Google Voice number, leave a message, 332-333-5155. And there's a free ebook if you are going through a breakup or a divorce, or your heart's being dragged along,
mm-hmm.
gettingoveryourbreakup.com. You could go to that link, download the free ebook. I do have my own YouTube channel. Just look up Ben Ufana, subscribe to my YouTube channel. There's videos that I post fairly consistently, and and yeah, just reach out to me if I could be of assistance. There's also, if you're in the midst of a devastating heartbreak, there's refiningrelationships.com. You could book a free call, but But I'm also working with all kinds of being trained by a Native American doctor, a medicine man, digestive, respiratory disorders, neurological issues, people with traumatic brain injuries or who've been ripped up in automobile accidents or sports injuries or just heart disease, stroke, just all kinds of things.
Thank you.
So do reach out to me if I could be of assistance.
Thank you so much for your work in the world and your time and this beautiful conversation. And I am so grateful to know that you're on the planet with me.
Thank you, Sophia, for this opportunity. I very much enjoy engaging with you.
Thank you.
Can you help me redefine truth and preservation of our soul shine? I can feel it, yours and mine. Close your eyes and witness it inside. In your bones, you will know. Trust and let go. Let it flow.